The performance and sustainability of asphalt pavements often depends on the right mix of construction materials. Dr. Amy Epps-Martin joins the podcast to explain the challenges and benefits of finding the right mix design.
Transportation infrastructure. It's what keeps our economy moving and gets people safely where they need to go. But maintaining safe, reliable infrastructure assets is a complex challenge that requires innovative solutions. I'm Nick Frank from Agile Assets, and I'll be your guide as we navigate through the complex and evolving world of infrastructure asset management.
My guest today is Dr. Amy Epps-Martin, a professor and senior research engineer at the Texas A&M Transportation Institute. She has more than 24 years of experience teaching civil engineering materials courses and conducting research on safe, sustainable asphalt technologies. Dr. Amy Epps-Martin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, let's just kind of get into your role at the Texas A&M Transportation Institute.
Sure. Well, I'm happy that I'm entering my 25th year as a faculty member in the Civil and Environmental Engineering Department, and also as a researcher with the Texas A&M Transportation Institute. Basically, I conduct and teach courses in asphalt materials, and my four research threads throughout the years have been in sustainable asphalt materials, including both mixtures and binders. And that's really been the majority of my focus. However, I've done some work in safe asphalt materials, basically porous friction coarse mixtures, a little bit of work on performance-based specifications for chip seal asphalt binders, and then some other random topics on asphalt materials characterizations, both binders and mixtures.
Today, our main topic is balanced mix design. So at a granular level, what is that?
So balanced mix design definitely is a big focus and thrust area in asphalt materials research right now. And the idea of mix design in general is that we need to make a recipe to make asphalt concrete mixtures that we pave our roads with. In fact, the majority of our roads in this country are paved with asphalt concrete. And we have component materials that are the black sticky asphalt binder and aggregates of varying sizes that we put together. And there's actually a third ingredient, which is air, which of course we don't have to pay for and doesn't weigh anything, but it's very important to the performance of the mixture. So we have the three A's, we have asphalt, air, and aggregates that we have to put together. And we have to figure out what's the recipe, what's the best recipe that we're gonna get the best performance over the design life, which is typically, we expect our roads to last, 15 to 20 years. We usually have to do some maintenance on them to keep them in good shape, but we put the mix down for quite a number of years, and we expect it to be durable. So mix design is figuring out, again, what's the ratios or the proportions of our component materials. When we talk about balanced mix design, we're trying to make sure that we have a balance between resistance to the primary forms of distress, which are rutting at high temperatures. Typically, that's going to be a problem soon after construction, and cracking, which is a more longer term durability type performance issue. And cracking can occur either with fatigue cracking due to repeated traffic loading, and it looks like an alligator cracking pattern in the wheel path. Or we can have low temperature cracking, which is transverse cracking, transverse to the direction of travel due to cold temperatures. And so we have to balance, unfortunately, the selection of materials and the proportions that we pick to give good rutting resistance would be opposite to those for good cracking resistance. So there's a balance point in there. You asked me, what is balanced mix design? So in the past, we've always been trying to do balanced mix design. That's just the new buzz term, I guess, if you will. And how it's different from what we used to do. Again, we were still always trying to balance that rutting versus cracking performance. Why it's different than it used to be is traditionally what we did is we would try to pick as much binder as possible to get good cracking resistance and durability with respect to moisture, the effects of moisture and oxidation or aging. And we would make sure that we didn't put too much binder in there such that we had a rutting problem. So that's kind of one of the balance points is just that proportion of binder content. And so there was a traditional mixed design systems by Marshall and Veeam that did just that. And then in the late 1980s, 1990s timeframe, there was a big national research project called the Strategic Highway Research Program. And that developed what we call the SuperPave volumetric mixed design process, in addition to some performance testing associated with that. Unfortunately, the performance testing didn't really get implemented, but the SuperPave volumetric mixed design method became wildly popular in the US. And with the SuperPave volumetric mixed design process, we are basically only looking at the quantity of those component materials, not the quality or the specific properties of those component materials as much, specifically the binders. And nowadays we have an increased focus on sustainability, where we're trying to increase the amount of recycled asphalt materials, or RAM, or some people have heard of RAP, which is reclaimed asphalt pavement, and RAS, which is recycled asphalt shingles. So we're trying to increase the amount of RAM in our mixtures, because there's significant environmental benefits as well as economic benefits. And so we want to make sure that we have the engineering benefits. That's what I say, the three E's: economics, environmental benefits, and engineering benefits. We want to make sure with this balanced mixed design process that we're going to have good performance with these higher RAM content mixtures. And so it makes a difference how aged that wrap material is, what virgin binders you're going to add in there, what additives you might add in there. And so all of that makes a difference in terms of getting a good mixture with balanced rutting and cracking performance, and good durability with aging.
So you mentioned not only the three A's, but also the three E's, which made me think that we were taking some sort of test. So as we move and kind of talk about some tests, what are some of the best tests to characterize rutting for balanced mixed design?
That's also a great question. That's like, if we could answer that, we'd be done. We wouldn't have to do research in asphalt pavement materials anymore. That's kind of what we're always searching for, right? Is that what are the right tests that we're going to utilize in a balanced mixed design system? Not only the test that's important, but also the threshold that you're going to set, or the criteria to ensure good performance. So there's always a trade-off between a more practical test that's usually with monotonic loading versus a more representative test, which would be with repeated loading. Because rutting and intermediate or fatigue type cracking is going to be load related because of the repeated motion of traffic. Whereas low temperature cracking is just going to occur whether there's traffic or not. So in the middle of nowhere in Nevada or West Texas, you're still going to have thermal cracking even if no car ever goes over that pavement. So there are differences there with load induced versus non-environmentally induced cracking. But the trade-off of being a more representative test, or even measuring material properties and putting them into models to predict performance, is it takes more time. It's more time and effort. And a lot of times during the construction process, we don't have that much time. We've obtained materials, and we need to get an answer on how to blend these materials in the best way. And so usually we're looking toward more practical tests and more practical aging or moisture conditioning protocols to again, simulate what's going to happen with our mixture in the field, because everything we do in the lab, we want to make sure it's representative, at least at some level, of what's going to happen in the field, or why do it. And so with respect to your question on a rutting test in particular, right now we have a pretty popular repeated load test called the Homburg wheel tracking test that's used in a lot of different states here in the US. And it's good because it is repeated loading, but it's kind of a torture test that combines moisture susceptibility and rutting resistance at the same time, because you're testing the material underwater at high temperatures. So that's somewhat of an issue, that you're kind of mixing and matching distresses, but you know, that happens in the field. So that's not the worst thing. There's some newer testing. The ideal rutting test has come about, or ideal RT test has come about. And it's aimed at, again, testing at a high temperature, because that's the critical condition, and only after short-term aging, because that's when we care about rutting. But it's very simple, fast, monotonically loaded specimen in indirect tension. So it has a special jig that holds the specimen, but to induce shear, but it's still a relatively fast, simple test. For cracking tests, we kind of have the same trade-off, a repeated load test versus a monotonically loaded test. And there's been a lot of interest in using the monotonic test with an index that takes into account fracture energy, as well as the tensile strength of the material. So there's been some newer modifications there. One of them is a semicircular bending test that determines a flexibility index. And then there's also the ideal cracking test, or the ideal CT test, that is done in indirect tension and just calculates different parameters than were traditionally calculated just with tensile strength. For the repeated load testing for cracking, there are some different tests. There's some direct tension tests of cylindrical specimens. There's also some something called the overlay test that is testing for reflective cracking, but we kind of use it more generally now to test for cracking resistance of the mix. So those are both repeated load types of tests that, again, take a long time. The other thing to consider with repeated load tests is there's a lot of variability associated with repeated load tests. So you need to do more replicates to get good values. And so all of that variability also comes into play when you're trying to set a threshold and a criteria, and when you're trying to do these mixed designs in different laboratories or have the agency verify the mixed design. And so all of that inter-lab variability, between lab variability versus within lab variability, all of that comes into play with respect to those performance thresholds that you have to have for a balanced mixed design system.
So following up on that a little bit, you mentioned having this balanced threshold. Based around the different worlds and the different states, how different could that be depending on if you're in a cold weather state, a warm weather state, or is that a universal threshold?
I've been fortunate to work on a couple of the big national research projects with some other partners from other universities and some consultants, as well as we always have to have a huge partnership with the DOTs, the Asphalt Pavement Associations, the contractors, and the material suppliers to make field projects happen. And so we have come up with really it wasn't called a balanced mixed design system, but we've come up with some evaluation tools for binder blends and mixtures that do balance rutting and cracking resistance in NCHRP project 9-58. And in that case, we did suggest tests and thresholds, again, to balance that performance. And those were for mixtures with high RAM content. So kind of circling back to what we were talking about with respect to high RAM content mixtures. Now I'm just starting another national effort on NCHRP 9-65, where we're looking at using that same type of framework and developing a standard practice that states can implement. And they might make different changes for their specific state, their specific materials. But the idea there is that we would have four climatic regions that have been defined for pavements in the United States. We have a wet freeze, a wet no freeze, a dry freeze, and a dry no freeze based on the climate conditions. And so using those four climatic regions, trying to determine what test and what threshold and what conditioning should be done for mixture testing to look at, again, balancing performance in terms of durability with respect to cracking and moisture and rutting. And so it's trying to kind of throw everything together, additives, using polymer modified binders, using high RAM contents, and taking into account that the durability might be different. In the northern states, you might use a little bit less aging for your mixtures to look at cracking resistance versus the southern states. The southern would be the no freeze two climatic zones. And then with respect to wet versus dry, you might not need to look at moisture conditioning in the Southwest United States, for example, in the dry no freeze climate region. Then for freeze thaw areas, which would be the northern freeze climatic regions, you would want to make sure that you do some kind of freeze thaw to your mixture before you test it for moisture susceptibility. So we are kind of starting to think like that as well.
Well, someone as myself, who's lived in a lot of these different regions, you know, I grew up in North Dakota. So obviously the cold and wet, and now in Texas, very different climate. And then I lived in Arizona for a while. And so it's interesting how, you know, that all factors into what is going to go into this mixture, this recipe, as you kind of alluded to earlier. You've mentioned a couple of times, you know, recycled materials and using that. So how can balanced mix design be achieved when you're using, let's dive a little bit more into the recycled asphalt pavements or other types of aggregates that can be used to help achieve a balanced mix design.
Most mixtures nowadays use some wrap, okay, for sure. Like it's hard to find virgin mixtures at the surface. And even the underlying layers, you can make a case that you could use even higher RAM contents because they don't have to be quite to the same quality standards. But we are utilizing right now in a big TxDOT effort, we are making mix designs that are balanced for high wrap mixtures, as well as mixtures with SAC-B aggregates, which in Texas, there's a system that basically they're just a little bit lower quality aggregates than the SAC-A aggregates. So there's definitions of tests that are used to define that. But so it's possible. And the point of the balanced mix design system is that you're actually going to test the mixture. So as long as you're putting that RAM and lower quality aggregates in when you're testing in the laboratory and getting that balanced performance, then you should be able to utilize those types of materials. You're not just looking at the binder because there's all kinds of issues if you're just going to look at the binder. Now, we do think that you can probably screen what binders are best to use when you have high RAM contents, for example, or what additives do you need to use maybe to when you have very heavily aged wrap before you move on to the mixture phase, because binder testing is a lot easier than mixture testing. So there's some use for binder and component material testing.
With balanced mix design, does it seem more useful to use it on high volume roads? Is this use it on your medium and low volume roads? Or is it, I guess you could say, more focused on those high volume roads?
Yeah. It should, because of the extra effort involved with that mixture testing process. So beyond the volumetric mix design that we use in a widespread basis, it's going to take more cost and more effort and more time. More resources are going to be required to get these balanced mix designs. But again, as material streams change and as the binder that you're getting from your supplier or your aggregate stockpile or your wrap stockpile changes, every time that happens, you get a different, unique combination of materials, and you need to engineer that combination of materials. So that's back to the practicality of the balanced mix design system. So these tests need to be practical. That's important. But different areas might be more comfortable with different tests that they've had more experience with. So different states, different countries, different counties, different cities even. If you're going to put all that effort in, at least for right now, we are generally focused on high volume facilities and surface mixtures. Although when you're doing field projects on a kind of an experimental basis, then maybe you don't want to put it on your high volume road because you're not sure what's going to happen. So when you're doing the learning process, maybe the implementation, you know, you might want to utilize, you know, smaller volume, lower volume roads.
You touched on implementation. And so, you know, you said these high volume roads. So, you know, we're thinking, you know, California, Texas, New York, a lot of high volume roads in those states. What are some of the steps that the agencies there can use to implement these balanced mix designs into their construction specifications?
Lots of people are working on that issue in particular, and how to give guidance, right, as to what needs to be done. I think any agency is going to want to put down some field projects that are just experimental to try to figure out what is the best test that they feel comfortable with, but most importantly, what is that threshold, that criteria that's tied to their materials and their definition of what good field performance is. It's very challenging because we have to, going back to that variability, we have to understand the variability. So there's sort of like a tiered approach that probably could be utilized where you take a mixture that you're satisfied with. It's kind of one of your mixtures that's a workhorse that you put down often. You know, this binder is really good and you like this gradation and the binder content seems to be sufficient and it's lasted for 5 or 10 years on a number of roads. You take that existing mix design and you just change a little bit, like let's increase the wrap content a little bit, or let's increase the wrap content even more, but let's open up the gradation so we can get a higher binder content. So that, because when we're increasing that RAM content, it's going to get more stiff and brittle and it's going to be more prone to cracking. So we got to do something to offset that. And one thing you could do is increase the binder content. We want to make sure we're using a good virgin binder when we put it with the high RAM contents. We have a parameter that we think might help to determine that. We want to make sure that our wrap is not too excessively aged, or we might want to use that a little bit lower content. So we kind of want to get the best of all worlds to come together and then try that with the existing mix design that we already know works pretty well. And so that's kind of one approach. And we could just do mix testing in sort of a simple approach. But if we wanted to learn more about our materials, we might want to go a step further and look at those component binders, the virgin binder, the wrap binder, and maybe even blending those binders in different combinations with different additives. That's kind of a more comprehensive approach, but I think it would give people more confidence and more ability to better determine their recipe that's going to give them good performance.
So the organization has their recipe figured out. You know, they figured out their region, they figured out their recipe. What are some of the benefits of tracking the performance of your balanced mix design sections in, let's say, a pavement management system?
So in that case, I think that it does need to be sort of a continually looked at, because when you set that threshold, I guarantee you're not going to have as much confidence in it as you want to, because it's very hard to have field projects that you can tie to lab performance. And so the more experience you get with placing materials in the field, it'd be great to keep tracking that lab performance that's corresponding to that, so that when you design 2 years from now, maybe that threshold has changed a little bit, because you know that you had it cranked down too tight before, and you can let the contractors have a little bit more leeway still get good performance. It might be cheaper to you. So there's lots of different things that you'll need to sort of circle back on and get feedback to understand the costs that were associated with using maybe a different or a better binder, or using higher wrap, which was going to lower your cost. So there's different things that increase the cost, different things that decrease the cost, and you can kind of keep track of those costs and benefits. And did it turn out the way you thought it was going to, where, oh, that did last more than 5 years without needing any maintenance, for example?
It's always going to be ever evolving. Like, it's not, okay, we figured this out once and we're done. Like, there's always going to have to be updates made and little tweaks made to your designs and recipes.
Yes. And especially because also more and more additives come on the market that can help with these types of mixtures. And so you have to have a way to figure out, well, what's the best additive and what's the dose that we want to use for that additive. So that's like yet another thing to throw in the recipe.
What do you see is the long-term look at these balanced mix designs? Is it going to get easier to figure out your recipes? Is there more readily available materials? Do you see that changing, and how it can improve infrastructure as we go 5, 10, 20 years down the road?
Well, I do think that we're making progress in terms of being able to, you know, incorporate sustainability more. I do think we're making progress toward increasing those RAM contents and how to do that, how to go about doing that. So I think that's going to happen. There's lots of people involved in this developing these types of systems. And so we have to keep working through collaborative efforts and get together and have workshops and symposiums and keep learning from each other. We can't just kind of operate in a vacuum. We have to keep pushing the envelope forward, because I think we do have a lot of knowledge. We just have to make sure that we're not duplicating things, and that we're doing things in the best way possible, the smartest way possible. These are materials that we want to be reusing, right? These are naturally occurring materials, which is great, but some areas of the country have lower quality aggregates, for example, or don't have as, the binders aren't as good, to be honest, right? And that's just based on the petroleum crude source, and that was formed over thousands of years. So it's just, you get what you get. These are naturally occurring materials, but some of these additives can play a role in terms of changing the performance and improving the performance.
Before I let you go, one final thing, is there anything that you think we didn't touch on, or any final thoughts that you have?
I think I've said a lot, probably too much, but I think this is a very exciting time for pavement engineering, really, to be honest. You know, asphalt itself is quote unquote a green product because it's a byproduct of getting gas and other types of oils. So it's already sort of an economic and environmentally friendly product, but in some case you could say there's a finite amount of it, right? So just like there's a finite amount of petroleum to get your for the gas and oil industry. So we want to use it in a smart way. And I think that we are making progress toward doing that. And so that's exciting. Hopefully it draws people into this field. And, you know, lots of people take for granted, right? Nobody really cares about a road until you drive to work and there's a bunch of construction or you hit a pothole or whatever. And so civil engineering in general probably doesn't get the respect that it should because people take it for granted. And so being a part of something that's important to somebody, actually most people every day of their life, it makes you feel like you have a purpose. So that's good.
As someone who works with many numerous civil engineers, I wholeheartedly agree with that sentiment. Dr. Amy Epps Martin from the Texas A&M Transportation Institute, thank you for sharing your expertise with us today.
All right, thanks a lot.
If you want to learn more about transportation asset management strategies that save time, money, and lives, head on over to agileassets.com. Once again, thank you to Dr. Amy Epps Martin for sharing her expertise with us today. I'm Nick Frank. Join us again next month for another edition of Move Your Assets.